Good morning. This is Focus 580, hour number two of our morning talk program. My name is David Inge. Glad to have you with us. The producers for the show, Harriet Williamson, Martha Diehl, Jason Croft, is at the controls. This morning, in this second hour of the program, our guest is Joseph White. He's the president of the University of Illinois. He is the 16th president, in fact, of the university. He took office in January of 2005. Before that, spent something like 30 years, almost 30 years, at the University of Michigan, Ann Arbor, as a teacher, administrator. He also got his Ph.D. in business administration there. And we're pleased to have him here on the program to talk a little bit about higher education generally and about this university specifically. The idea here is that you can call and ask questions. People who are connected with the university community or outside are certainly welcome. I have a few things to talk about, but the idea here is that people listening can do the same. You can do one thing for us, and that will help us, and that's to be brief in your comments so we can get in as many callers as possible. Here in Champaign-Urbana, 333-9455. Toll-free, 800-222-9455. Thanks very much for being here.
Thank you, David. It's great to be here on a beautiful morning in Champaign-Urbana.
There are a number of things I'd like to give you the chance to talk about, and in no particular order of importance. Maybe one to start with would be the increasing cost of higher education, something that I'm sure concerns everyone at this university and other colleges and universities. Certainly one of the things that we know is that it costs more to go to college every year. Tuition keeps going up, and there are concerns about the level of support universities receive from government. Saying that, I'm sure it goes without saying that you are concerned about the cost of college education these days. The question perhaps is, what can we do about it?
I think that the rising cost of a college education is what makes our position in the world more important and valuable than ever before. I was on a public television show in Chicago recently, and I had the pleasant job of explaining our $14,000 total cost of enrollment in Urbana versus the director of admissions at Northwestern, who had to explain their $43,000 total cost per year. The point is that, costs to students and their families have been rising. They've been rising much more than we'd like to see in the face of a lack of increased state support over most of the last 5 years, and that puts a bigger burden on students and their families. But I still think today that the way in which we provide a first-class education for about $10,000 in tuition at the Urbana campus, which is an education that has a market value three times that, $30,000 from any private university, is a great thing. And when you think about the amount of financial aid that is provided both by the state and the university, so that, for example, any student with family income of $40,000 or less basically pays nothing in tuition, makes us a highly accessible quality education. So yes, I'm concerned about costs, but I'd put it this way to you. Many years ago, when my Italian grandparents emigrated from Italy, they set a goal of enabling their children to go to college. And, of course, in those days, it was their boys to go to college. And they worked hard and they saved and they managed to achieve that. And so my uncles were doctors and lawyers and so on. Nobody can convince me that it's harder today if you're willing to make the requisite sacrifices as a family to afford college than it was then. I think our university education at the University of Illinois is high quality, affordable with some sacrifice, and accessible.
Has it over time become more difficult for you as an administrator to persuade legislators that state support of higher education is important?
Well, I'm pleased to report that we did have some success this year. We received the first increase in our general appropriation, about 1.5% increase, $12 million from the state. So we have had some success. But I think the broader answer to your question is this. when you go to Springfield and talk with legislators, it's not at all hard to persuade them about the importance of higher education. They believe in education. They believe in higher education. They really love the University of Illinois. The problem is there's not a lot of money there available to dedicate to higher education because they're in a squeeze play. Politicians, right or wrong, have come to believe that any notion of increased taxes is sure death for them electorally. And on the other side, there are rising costs which for them are unavoidable, incarceration, Medicaid, et cetera. And so they look at a great university like the University of Illinois and they say, we really love you, we believe in you. But, you know, you can raise tuition if you really have to, and you can raise private support, and your faculty are successful in receiving grants and research grants and contracts. And when we look at other state agencies, they don't have those options when it comes to other sources of revenue. So I would say the summary of their reaction is, we believe in you, we love you, with regret, there's not much money for you.
It seems that for some time now, within elementary, secondary education, one of the big buzzwords has been accountability. Mm-hmm. That is that that administrators, parents, lawmakers who are also contributing to the cost of public education, there's this idea that somehow we have to assure ourselves that we're getting our money's worth and the students are getting a good education. There are some people, I think, who would like to extend that to higher education, and there have been some suggestions that perhaps that students, before they receive their degree from college, should actually take some kind of a test to demonstrate their proficiency in the area in which they're getting their degree. And I think that that points to a feeling, and I imagine there are some people in Springfield, other state capitals, who feel this way too, that they're not quite sure what it is that colleges and universities are doing, and that they're not quite sure what they're getting for the money, the state money, that they put into the college and the university. What do you think about that? And do you think that indeed that reflects some suspicion on the part of some lawmakers that it's not a serious enterprise and that it may not indeed be money well spent?
Well, I don't duck hard questions, so let me first say that I think the sort of testing that you hear about occasionally is really a bad idea. I think it's redundant. I think it plays into the notion that testing improves results. I don't think that's the case. Here's the thing. I believe completely in accountability for results. Here are the indicators that we see. This year, I met yesterday with the director of admissions for the Urbana campus, 23,000 applicants for about 7,000 positions. That suggests that a broad marketplace of students and their families think we're doing an excellent job and they want in. And if you talk with those who didn't get in and you hear their disappointment, it suggests that our results are pretty darn good when it comes to educating thousands of young people. Here's another sort of result I focus on. Every year, the faculty of the University of Illinois, in addition to publishing hundreds and thousands of articles in top referee journals, which says their peers think they are excellent, also bring in $600 to $700 million a year in competitively won research grants and contracts from the top agencies, from the National Science Foundation, the National Institutes of Health, and so on. That is a very competitive marketplace, speaking about the quality of what we do. So I don't think there really ought to be much doubt about our accountability or our results. I think we live in a highly accountable environment, and while there's always room for improvement in everything in a big institution, and I'm usually the cheerleader for let's not rest on our laurels, let's get better and better, I think it's undeniable that our results when it comes to educating young people and doing quality research are tremendous.
We have a call here to bring into the conversation. We'd welcome others. Our guest this morning in this hour of Focus 580 is Joseph White. He's the president of the University of Illinois. You have questions about higher education, 333-9455, toll-free 800-222-9455. We have a caller here in Urbana. It's line one. Hello.
I have two comments. One is about observations of the access to money of students I see around campus. The other is about the Washington Monthly's rating of colleges and universities. So the first thing is, it seems as though students have a lot of cars, iPods, computers, TVs in their bedrooms, video games. We have rental properties, and I have one campus group house. And the students are becoming more and more affluent. They have fewer bicycles because they're driving their cars around. They have more cars than people did 30 years ago. They've got money for some students. It seems like a lot of students, just looking at people walking down the street, they've got money for their own individual cell phones and cell phone plans. So I'm a bit jaundiced when people complain about the rising cost of universities. And then secondly, we have family that are very much into National Service, or Burma Peace Corps, et cetera, and they were very intrigued by the Washington Monthly's own evaluation of colleges and universities. I'm sure you've probably seen this. The U.S. News and World Report rated the university, I think, University of Illinois, somewhere in the 40s. Washington Monthly rated the University of Illinois number 16. Princeton was rated number one by U.S. News and World Report, but Washington Monthly rated them at 42. As contributors to the nation and value for dollar, and they used a variety of interesting things, like percentage of students who do national service, including ROTC and Peace Corps. And they had, I forget how they did it, but it had something having to do with Pell Grants and percentage of graduates. It seems to me that a whole hour David, could be spent talking with the editors from Washington Monthly about why they challenged U.S. News and World Report about how they were doing their ratings. So it seems to me the U of I came out pretty well. In fact, the Big Ten came out quite well in that survey. So what do you have to say?
Thank you very much for calling. Let me address the second matter first. Well, first I want to say the Washington Monthly is one fine publication. I've read it for years. It's one of my very favorites. I've canceled my subscription to U.S. News. I have read the article in Washington Monthly. Basically, the issue was rating and ranking universities on what they do for the nation. And it was certainly no surprise to any of us who know and love the University of Illinois and the Big Ten universities that we ranked very highly and better than the elite private universities because, you know, we're a land-grant university. We were founded on values of service and contribution to society. You know, it's in our DNA as an institution. So when a publication develops a methodology to really figure out what kind of institutions are making the greatest contribution to serving the nation, the state, the community, it's no surprise that it is the University of Illinois and our students and faculty and graduates who are doing a wonderful job. And, you know, there are a variety of methodologies, and each has its strengths and weaknesses. I think this was a very useful ranking, and I was pleased that U of I did well. We did move up slightly in the U.S. News ranking to number 40. We moved up slightly among public universities. We were ranked in the top 10, which we certainly are, among public universities in America. So there's no question that you know, we're a very strong university in a very competitive world of universities, and I think we're all proud of that. On your earlier point with regard to students and money, you noted this, and I want to underline it in passing. Some students have a lot of money. Not all students have a lot of money. I go out to eat in Urbana, and if it's a college-age student, I usually ask, are you a student at the University of Illinois? I introduce myself. It's important. There are plenty of students out there who continue to work their way through college, hold down jobs while they're here. I'm sure that they feel some amount of envy at their friends with excess cash and new cars and everything they want. But I actually think those students are the minority. Having said that, I rode my bike through campus on Saturday because I love move-in day. You know, it's just to have 35,000 people descend in your community all in one day is quite an amazing experience. And it was a beautiful day, and I wanted to thank everybody, the students who were helping with move-in. They did a wonderful job. And it is true when you see the piles of stuff that students are, you know, that are lying on the curbs waiting for dads, as they always have, and now moms to, you know, to heft that stuff up the stairs. It's pretty impressive what the students bring to school. Look, the whole society is more affluent. You know, stuff is in abundance. But that doesn't take away from the fact that for some students and their families, paying for U of I education is a cakewalk, and for others, it's a real struggle. And that's why financial aid based on family income is really important.
I want to thank the caller. We have a couple of others who are waiting to get into the conversation here. We'll go next to Kankakee for another comment. Line number 4, toll-free line. Hello.
Your caller's understanding that University Extension is an institution primarily associated with one college, ACES. What are the prospects of University Extension being reorganized during your administration to become an extension of the entire university? Thank you.
Thanks for that call. Extension at the University of Illinois is a very proud tradition. We continue to have a presence in over 80 counties, which is about 80% of the counties in the state of Illinois. And by the way, we have a major urban presence, not only a rural presence in Illinois. I came into the presidency with a question, which is, has Extension adapted to changing times? Because today, obviously, people can get a great deal of information at their fingertips online, and I have been amazed to see the adaptation and the continuing vitality of Extension at the University of Illinois. I was at the State Fair last week, and one of my favorite things to do there, besides milking a cow, which I enjoyed a lot, and I want to say did quite well, was meeting the 4-H students. And Extension plays a vital role around the state in supporting and promoting 4-H. And 4-H itself is today, as you probably know, a rural, not only a rural, but also an urban organization. With regard to your question about reorganizing Extension, I'm open to that possibility. I have not heard from anybody that there is a pressing need to do that. There's a much bigger subject related to it, however, which is that I think the University of Illinois in the years ahead, much in line with our historic mission of providing quality education on a very large scale, needs to take advantage of modern technology, our facilities around the state, which includes, by the way, Rockford and Peoria, not just Urbana-Chicago and Springfield, and partnerships with other universities and community colleges in order to bring a quality U of I education to thousands of people who really need it today, but who are never going to have the privilege of spending an extended period of time on one of our campuses. That's related to Extension, but it's different. But I did want to mention that because perhaps we can talk some more about it.
Yeah. Well, you know, I think that this is an interesting area. And you mentioned the fact that the university was a land-grant institution and that the basic idea behind creating them was to bring the benefits of higher education and modern technology to people broadly and to try to better people's lives. I think people would also make the argument that even back then, that those who came up with the idea of the land-grant institution also had this idea that making education like this broadly accessible was a very important part of civil society and of a well-functioning democracy. Do you think that people at the university think about beyond what we have traditionally thought of as being the territory of Extension, think about what they can do to take what they know and somehow make that more broadly available? You know, open the place up, break down the walls some, and get out from the boundaries of the campus.
We are thinking about that and making plans in that regard very aggressively. Let me say this first. I think that the land-grant movement, the Morrill Act of 1862, was one of the wisest pieces of public policy in modern history for the following reason. The Morrill Act, the land-grant movement, recognized that quality educational institutions could accomplish three things simultaneously. Number one, education would enable people to achieve their dreams, their individual dreams for themselves and their families. Number two, a quality educational institution could help build a strong economy. And number three, a quality educational institution could help build a great democracy. Think about it. Fulfilling individual dreams, building a strong economy, building a great democracy. That was a very ambitious set of goals behind the Morrill Act. What's amazing is it actually happened. I mean, it's not even a question as to whether that aspiration has been fulfilled. The University of Illinois for 140 years has been helping people accomplish those goals, and it's helped create a great economy in the state of Illinois and a great democracy in Illinois and in the nation. Looking ahead, I think the question, David, that you posed, and it's the right question, is this. What do we do next? Obviously, you know, we're proud of the fact that we educate 70,000 students a year on our three campuses. We're proud of the fact that our 6,000 or 7,000 faculty members do a great job as specialists in their disciplines and their leaders in their respective research fields. We've made huge contributions to the Green Revolution, to the creation of the Internet, and so on. But what do we do next? I don't think it's enough only to maintain and develop the quality of our three campuses. I don't think that would be – that's a necessary but not sufficient condition to fulfill our historic mission. I think we have to recognize the following. This is quite amazing to me. About 85% of Americans or a little more graduate from college. Over 85% of Americans graduate from high school. Only about 28% graduate from college. I think this is one of the most yawning gaps in American life. Because when you look at the dreams people have for their own futures and their children's futures, and when you think about the economic competition we're in a global world, and you think about how important it is to have an informed, educated citizenry to make wise decisions in a democracy, and we are so privileged to live in this free country, I don't think it's acceptable to have a nearly 50 percentage point gap between those who graduate from high school and those who graduate from college. So what's the University of Illinois going to do about it? We are thinking deeply about this, and I think the simple answer is, in the years ahead, we are going to have to take a quality education to motivated people who are willing to put in the time and the effort and the sacrifice in order to get a good college education, but who don't have the privilege and never will of spending an extended period of time on one of our campuses. I think in the future, we're going to have to create a rich mix of online and in-person education for tens of thousands of people to enable them to get the education that they want and that the state and the nation know they need for us to have the future we want. It's a big subject, but we are thinking deeply about it.
We are at a midpoint already. Our guest this morning in this hour, Joe White, he is president of the University of Illinois. If you have questions, they're welcome. We have a couple of people who are ready to go. Others, just give us a call, 333-9455, toll-free 800-222-9455. Just let me ask a question here for the benefit of someone who was not going to be able to call in, asked, could I ask this question, and they and anyone can go back and listen to your reply later on. AFSCME, Local 698, has a contract that's currently in mediation. The decision deadline is the end of this month. This listener says that, and I'm not sure if this is a man or woman, the listener is optimistic, hoping that it will pass, would like you to please comment on the status of this and other contracts currently in mediation.
There are about 40 unions that represent employees of the University of Illinois. I'm a strong believer in the value and the power of the collective bargaining process. It usually works. I believe it will work in this case. I can assure you that the university is acting in good faith at the bargaining table, and I'm confident that the AFSCME negotiators are also. You know, conflict is uncomfortable for people, and people really worry about whether we can get through these things. I think history says that we will, and I'm confident that we will in this case. It's also an opportunity to say that I have met hundreds, perhaps thousands, of the employees of the University of Illinois who are really the backbone of this institution, who quietly serve with dedication and quality and competence. This is an opportunity to say thank you to each and every one of them for what they do.
All right. Let's go back to the phones here. Next caller, line number two in Urbana. Hello.
Hi.
Yes.
I'm concerned about recycling, and in particular, I'm concerned about the amount of recycling and trash and usable items that are going into the dumpsters in the apartment sections of Urbana and Champaign. Is there no way to teach and encourage our students on campus, maybe through orientation, to participate in recycling? If you went through the alley, say, after final exams in August, you would see that 60 or 70% of what's in those dumpsters is cardboard, plastic bottles, cans, glass, shampoo bottles, and a lot of usable items. And the Y is doing a great thing to run its dump and run sale, but there just isn't enough of something that's going on, working with landlords, working with students, working with city. It's just unbelievable. I live in Faculty Ghetto, and as soon as these kids hit this campus, it's McDonald bags in my yard, it's water bottles, it's beer cans. It just seems like a strange thing for a group of kids that are as bright as these kids are not to be able to recycle stuff.
Well, yes, thank you for your call. I know what you mean. I live in the same community. In fact, I live on the edge of that lovely Faculty Ghetto, and I mentioned taking a bike ride around the campus the other day, and I also took a jog the day before that, and I knew the students were starting to come back because I picked up off the front lawn of the president's house a crushed Sprite can and, you know, a potato chip bag and that kind of thing, and threw them away. When I do ride my bike around, I see exactly what you described. I suppose after all the years I've spent in university campuses, you know, I'm a little bit inured to seeing the, you know, the sofas on the curb and all the junk from apartment cleanouts. It's one of those ironies that, you know, 85% plus of Americans say they're environmentalists, and maybe we are a lot of the time, but suddenly when the end of the term comes and it's time to move out, you know, environmentalism seems to go out the window along with the with all the garbage. It is a difficult problem. I don't think the university can do it by itself. I think that being green needs to be a community-wide aspiration, both for the university and the communities of Champaign-Urbana. And I think there's some of it, but I think there's certainly room for more recycling. I think that working with the owners of private rental residences could be helpful. And I guess on my list of things I'll take away from this conversation is your note that it bothers you and we need to do a better job. I agree.
Thank you.
All right. Champaign County is the next listener. This is line number one.
Hello. Hi. Mm-hmm. Joining you here on the Extension University of the Air program, I guess. Probably more people know about the U of I or formed opinion about it through media, probably more AM. It's too bad it doesn't get into Springfield, I've always said, to maybe affect some policy. But I also wanted to mention that I'm not going to ask you about this directly. Maybe you'll take the initiative to proactively say something about this. But I think a lot of people take it for granted where the land grant came from. You know, this is Destiny, Western expansion, and I think we should do better by the people whose land was appropriated so the university could be begun. But someone already mentioned the labor dispute, and that's what actually I was mainly wanting to call about. It's interesting you're on today because three different major unions are having demonstrations on the campus today. They're starting in various different locations. They're all going to probably rendezvous at 5 o'clock or so at the alma mater. And I think it will be a fairly large group. because these three major unions all have reached various sorts of impasses with the university, and I think something needs to be done. I view this as a larger issue. The previous president, Stuckel, was known worldwide practically for the idea that the university should model itself on a corporation, whereas I think that actually the reverse is true, as more and more corporations look like campuses. I think that you're pointing at the service model and thankfully talking about the Washington Monthly, acknowledging that people who are educated here go on to, with this idea of public service. I think it would be a public service for the university to, you know, disabuse the idea that, you know, one should reduce learning to just the core mission and should look into outsourcing and all those sorts of things that are so controlled by the next financial statement, the bottom line. I know there are economic pressures, but I think that the university should try and rise above that and be a model for corporations rather than vice versa. Now, that's an awful lot, and I guess I'll ask you for a response on several of those issues.
All right.
Well, you probably know I've spent some time in the corporate world. My own history is about 80% in the university world and about 20% in the corporate world. I often tell corporate people that many of our practices in the universities, in the university, are really best practices. There are very few companies that last more than, you know, 25 to 50 years, and there are a number of major universities which have proven unbelievably durable and adaptable. And I've said you need to think deeply about why. You know, we're highly decentralized. We believe in the primacy of the and the dignity and respect of the individual. We are not an extraordinarily controlling organization. In fact, we're quite entrepreneurial in an intellectual way, and so on and so forth. And we take the long view. You know, we don't manage for the next quarter. We do take the long view in all the decisions we make. And because corporate people generally think universities are badly managed, they're surprised at that. But I actually speak with credibility on that point, having been in both worlds. I do want to say on the labor matter, I did notice in the news that there are going to be these rallies today, and I think that's good. You know, I think it's one of the great things about American life that people who are concerned about things assemble and they speak out, and they often speak loudly. I know because sometimes they speak right outside my office on Henry Street. On Wright, outside the Henry Building. But there's this point I want to make to you. There are really two aspects of labor relations and working with people. One is economic. It's important. The other is non-economic. It's equally important. The economic issues do get sorted out at the bargaining table, along with a few non-economic issues. But every time I meet with working people at the university and their representatives, which I did recently in my office, a big group of about 15 people, I'm always reminded that at bottom it's about respect, that what people are seeking at work and in life is respect, being somebody, being treated with dignity, having their views listened to, and even if there are disagreements, having those differences treated respectfully. And so while I am confident that the differences, particularly the economic differences, will be sorted out in the collective bargaining process that we're in, we can never stop working on the matter of being inclusive, treating everybody who's a member of the university community with respect and dignity, valuing their work. And I want to tell you one quick story on that point. I met with the people who clean our buildings recently, and I expressed my thanks to them for the hard job that they do. Nobody should ever take clean buildings for granted, and when buildings aren't clean, they should remember the reason is usually not somebody who didn't care about their work. The reason was usually that, you know, the staffing levels weren't what they needed to be and so on. And these people have borne the brunt of a lot of necessary budget cuts in recent years. And it was striking to see how frustrating it is to many of these people when they want to keep a building clean and they find they can't do it because they just can't get to everything. The time they have available to do the cleaning isn't what they want it to be. And I said to them, you know, our goal is to recognize with appreciation the hard work you do. We're entitled to expect a lot, and you know we expect a lot of you, and you expect a lot of yourselves. And in the years ahead, I want this to be a university in which the work environment is such that people feel this is a really good place to work, their work is appreciated, they have the resources they need to do a good job. That's what we're trying to accomplish.
Well, that does address a lot of what I asked about. It seems to me, though, that the whole idea of aspiring to make a humane workplace, as you say, it does include these more ineffable issues, but
no.
But recompense and the ability to do the job well and not have all this cutbacks on services is part of it as well. But by the way, service employees are starting out at 4 o'clock at the Hailing
right.
Gate on Lincoln and the Illinois. If people want to ask them and thank them personally too, I guess. Thanks.
I do want to make this point to you. I talked with this group about the fact that, you know, we are not doing wholesale outsourcing at the University of Illinois. I don't favor that. We need the workforce and their union representatives to make sure that we have the working arrangements such that we don't have to turn to outsourcing. We need the quality of work, and we need it done at reasonable cost. Because, you know, in a university under pressure, the pressures for outsourcing are great, but we have not succumbed to them.
We have about 15 minutes left in this part of Focus 580. Our guest is Joseph White. He's president of the University of Illinois. Questions are welcome. 333-9455, toll-free 800-222-9455. Next caller is in Crete. We'll go there. Line 4.
Yeah,
hello?
I just wondered why more students are not taking jobs on campus, so you could, in a sense, cut some of the problems of student financial aid by having the students doing jobs that now labor unions are doing. But the main point, if you want to add something to that, go ahead. But my main point involves satellite campuses. Often these satellite campuses play a second base to the main campus. In other words, that they teach heavier loads, they get lower salaries, and they're looked upon by the main campus usually as Yahoo's in disguise. Now, with Chicago, of course, as a major institution, University of Illinois Chicago, that probably isn't a problem as much as it is in other universities and other cities and states. But I would like your thoughts not only on the question of the issue of the demeaning of the satellite campuses, the branch campus of Springfield, for example, but the possibilities of, at one time anyway, states establishing separate universities so that the mother university would not, in a sense, cast aspersions on these satellite campuses, causing them to have higher student loads, more hours to teach, and lower salaries. I don't know about Illinois, but I would think because of Chicago, that's really not a problem any longer with your campus.
Well, I want to be very direct about this. I don't view any of our campuses as satellite campuses. I view the University of Illinois as one university, a confederation of three very distinct campuses, each valuable in its own right. I sometimes annoy people, in Champaign-Urbana, because I don't regularly use the term flagship to describe the Urbana campus. They want me to. But, you know, I've said I don't describe my older child as my flagship son, and, you know, my daughter is something else, because I don't feel that way about them. And the same is true of these campuses. The University of Illinois at Urbana-Champaign is 140 years old. It has a distinguished history. It has many, many firsts in its history, including, I learned this morning, being the home of the founding of public broadcasting, which we're participating in. That was news to me. I love learning about firsts at the University of Illinois in Urbana-Champaign. The University of Illinois at Chicago is a very distinctive institution that I think has a very good shot over the next 10 to 20 years of becoming one of America's top three or four urban research universities. Think UC San Diego, UCLA, NYU. It is in one of the world's great cities, in one of the world's fastest improving neighborhoods, with health sciences on the west and a full range of liberal arts and professional schools on the east side of campus. And UIS, the University of Illinois at Springfield, you know, over 10 years as a member of the family now, I think has a really brilliant aspiration, which is to become one of America's top five small public liberal arts universities. Think William & Mary. I think having a William & Mary of the Midwest is a proper aspiration for UIS. As I like to say, you know, they have Jefferson, we have Lincoln. So to me, this is not a hierarchy of value or a hierarchy of importance. And let me address the hard edge of your question, which is, you know, why are teaching loads different and so on? Teaching loads are different across the Urbana campus itself. We compete in a marketplace for faculty and salaries and teaching loads and other conditions are a function of the market in which we compete. So there's nothing wrong or unusual about having different conditions, not only on different campuses, but across, but within campuses. So these are three wonderful universities, wonderful campuses in one great university, and I definitely don't think of them as satellites.
I hope that gets to the question of the caller. We're getting short on time. I have some other calls. I hope you will forgive me if I go on, and we go next to back here to someone in Urbana, line number one. Hello.
Hello. I just want to feedback my feeling that the University of Illinois is a wonderful institution. My husband's father was faculty and attended the U of I as a student. Our generation and my siblings have attended the U of I, and now the next generation, my sister and my children, are students enrolled there. And it is just amazing what exposure to the University of Illinois can do for a family. And I just want to thank you.
Could I comment on this? I know we're running out of time, but I do want to comment. My wife, Mary, and I have been here at the University of Illinois for 18 months. We love this place. We love the University of Illinois. We love everything about it. It's an incredible privilege for me and for us to serve the university. Because we live in the president's house, we're reminded every day of the extraordinary history and the quality and the aspirations of the University of Illinois. But it's not about place, it's about people. And I just want to mention two things. You know, it's a great faculty that make a great university. The faculty are supported by the staff, and I've expressed my thanks to them. The faculty attract the students, and it's wonderful to be around vibrant young people. But here's what it's like to be at the University of Illinois. I mentioned milking a cow. I don't like to do things without rehearsal. So about a week ago, I went and spent a couple hours with Professor Dick Wallace of the College of Aces. He's professor of dairy production. And yes, he taught me how to milk a cow. But more important than that, he showed me the entire dairy production operation. And his daughter, who's a sophomore at the University of Illinois here in Urbana, was with us, as well as my daughter and son-in-law. And while we were talking and walking, his daughter said, you know, he really spends about 12 to 14 hours a day out here all the time. That's the dedication you see in our faculty. They love what they do. They are experts in what they do. And another example of what it's like to be president of the University of Illinois, we have a garden on the grounds of the president's house. My mom and dad are 90. They live here in Champaign. My dad's a master gardener, so he helped us plant a garden. There hadn't been one there, actually, since President Eikenberry's days. We planted it right where he used to have his garden. And my dad, I must say, was astounded at the fertility of the soil because the stuff just exploded out of the ground. And now we have tomatoes like you wouldn't believe. They're absolutely wonderful. But in fact, we have so many tomatoes that last night, and this is the point of my story, I delivered, my wife and I delivered some to Judy Eikenberry. And then I called Carl Woese. Now, you know, Carl's not your ordinary faculty member. You know, he's not early in his career. He's unbelievably distinguished and a Crawford Prize winner and a member of the Royal Academy. He lives about a block from me. I called Carl, and as we've got some tomatoes, maybe you and Gay would like some. So we took some tomatoes over to Carl, and we stood there and talked for a while. You know, it's a very human place. It's a wonderful place to live. Yes, the university has grandeur. It has history. But day to day, it's just a wonderful human community.
Well, again, thank the call. Let's go to line number two and someone in Champaign for another call. Hello.
Hello?
Yes.
Quick question. Where does the president think the universities have failed? Let me give you one example. He says that the universities and educational systems are supposed to support our democracy, and yet we probably have one of the most miserable percentage of voting record, you know, in the world. I lay that in front of the educational system. I'll take my answer off the air.
All right. Well, comment.
You know, two points I want to make. One is the voting record is, I think, a terrible indictment, really, of civic engagement. I'm not going to argue with you at all about that. Political scientists will say that it's not quite as easy to interpret voting turnout as you and I do are, in the sense that, you know, if people are upset about things, they do turn out in larger numbers. So, you know, to some degree, maybe it's a reflection of, this is a pretty good place, and, you know, maybe I don't need to be that involved. But I'm not going to let people out that easy. People ought to vote. Probably my biggest concern, you probably saw this in the newspaper recently. I can't remember, but, you know, more people knew the names of the Three Stooges than could name the three branches of government. Now, that really, I have to say, that got under my skin. I don't think you can quite lay all the blame for this on, you know, our educational institutions, or particularly higher education. I mean, I think there's a cultural phenomenon in America in which, you know, we're obsessed by what I view as trash and celebrity and, you know, passing things and ephemeral matters and materialism and so on, to some extent to the exclusion of far deeper and more important things, including who leads us. And how our government works. What I would say is, I think it would be far, 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 far worse without the quality education that students get at places like the University of Illinois.
We have a couple of minutes left. I want to go back to something, an aspect that an earlier caller raised, and that is the concern that I think some people have about creeping corporatism in higher education. And one of the things that I think concerns faculty particularly is the future and the security of the notion of tenure.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there are places, I think, where university governing boards have moved in the direction to try to get away from tenure, to have fewer tenured faculty. They would seemingly like to have more control over hiring and firing of faculty. And I think that there are some people who worry about the future of tenure. Do you think that it is something that an institution that should be preserved?
Yes, absolutely. I think tenure is very valuable for the university, and I think there is no threat to it at the University of Illinois. I know our Board of Trustees very well. They have a sophisticated understanding of the university and how it works, and, you know, I think tenure is really valuable for three reasons. First of all, it protects academic freedom. That's crucial, the search for the truth and the ability to call things as they are, even if it's unpopular. Second, tenure is a very valuable prize, and it's one of the things that attracts outstanding people into our world, people who, frankly, could go make a lot of money elsewhere. But it's a very attractive prize. And the third thing is, I explain tenure to corporate people and tell them they're missing something, because of the tenure system, we do severe, extensive reviews of early career performance, in years 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, in order to make a forecast as to regarding career-long success. And we say goodbye to a lot of people early in their career who are good but don't measure up to our tenure standards. I've been in the corporate world. I've seen the people who are 20 years in and not performing very well, and nobody ever should have let them get there. We don't let them get there in the university world because of tenure reviews. So, yes, I think it's a very valuable institution.
And we're just about the point here where we're ready to finish up. Any last sort of thoughts you'd like to leave with folks?
Only this. In every speech, I say what I believe, which is that the University of Illinois is this state's most valuable asset in creating a prosperous future for the people of Illinois. It's also an institution we love very much, and I'm happy to serve.
Well, thanks very much for being here. We appreciate it. I would hope that would not be the last time.
Thank you, David. I'll come over any time.
All right. Joseph White, he is the president of the University of Illinois.